Okay, so last time we met, so to speak, we spoke about the Nachash and who he was, what he was, and now we're going to speak tonight about how he was cursed. So in order to do that, it's worthwhile going through the Sukkim where he is cursed, and then seeing the Mefarshim after that. So it is in Bereishis, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Dalet. It says that Vayomer Hashem, Elokim El Hanachash, Hashem, God the Lord, said to the serpent, Ki Asisa Zos, because you did this. Arura Tzal Mikol Beimo, you are accursed from any animal, Mikol Chayas HaSadeh. And now, a behemoth is a domestic animal. You know that, according to the Chazal have a Rashi brings down that there's a drasha from the fact that it says mikol behemoth mikol chayas sadeh, from more than any domestic animal and more than any undomesticated animal. So rather, Chazal say that from here he learns that the gestation of a snake is 7 years, but. But there is a more Pashup shot. The Pashup shot would be that, based on what we saw last week, there is an opinion that the serpent was a humanoid kind of creature. So humanoid kind of creature has to descend several levels in order to get down to being the serpent of today. So it goes down below a domestic animal, domesticated animal, and then down below even a wild animal. And out of the Chosei Lech, you're going to walk on your belly. In other words, you're going to slither. And eat dirt all the days of your life. Ve'vash pasapesva, ve'vash, she said, enmity I will place between you and the woman. Uvein zaracha, uvein zara, between her offspring and your offspring. Actually, your offspring and her offspring. Uyishuv charosh. He is going to crush your head, and you will bite him on the heel. Okay, so that's the first. Now we said last week that the Sfarnu is the one who takes all of this as a metaphor. So let's see the Sfarnu first. The Sfarnu says, "All right, Tommy Cole, she has seek tavosav utrachav that he will attain his desires and his needs." Who's he? Not the snake. The snake is not a person. The snake is not even necessarily an animal. The snake is a metaphor for the Yetzer Hara. So if that's the case, when the curse to the snake is really the curse to Adam himself. And saying that Adam himself will attain his desires and his needs, it's tzar, with anguish, with chisaron tanug, and with a lack of pleasure, Yosem Kol Shar Ba'alechaim, more than any other animal, more than any other living creature. Kiam Ram, now it seems astonishing because we know human beings have a power of indulgence and pleasure. We say that they don't enjoy things. So what he says is that Kiam Ram, Chazal say, Ra'iso Chayav Ba'ov Shem B'nei Umnus, have you seen an animal or a bird that they need to be engaged in the craft? The whole concept of parnasa, of trying to make a living, is a uniquely human quality. And that is, says the Sforno, is the ultimate detractor from any true and comprehensive pleasure and fulfillment of desire. Because nothing comes for nothing. And animals, everything comes for nothing. So therefore, he says, this is the ultimate curse which was given to Adam, that they get their parnasa without any anguish, and we have anguish. And the pasuk makes it explicit when it says, you're going to slither on your stomach. The slithering on the stomach is an indication of the anguish a person has to go through in order to get his sustenance. Kiyom Ram, like they say, Shari, this in the same Mishnah in Kiddushin. Shari Oti Maasai, I made my deeds wicked, the Kipachas Mercy, and as a result lost my sustenance. But when they say, Kama Tirchos Tarach Adam Arishon, how many Tirchos, how much toil did Adam Arishon have to go through Achloch HaPas before he was able to eat bread? If you remember, until Noah, at the end of Parashas Bereishis, man did not even have plows. So when it says later on, that thorns and thistles grew for him, that happened because nobody even knew how to plow the ground. And without plowing, you get all sorts of things mixed in together with your grain. So it was even more difficult at that time. Now, of course, to go off on a bit of a tangent, not very much though, but a little bit, it's important for man after the sin to have work. It's not just a penalty. There's no such thing as a penalty Judaism, which is not also rectifying. Because work helps defeat the Yetzer Hara, right? The Mishnah says in Avos, Yafa Torah imalacha, it's good for Torah to be accompanied by a craft. Because the toil and both of them together causes you to diminishes your the chances of sinning. So what we see from this is that the Yetzer Hara is dealt with by this giving man this load of work. In, because Gan Eden, Adam proved, was not where he was ready to be. Because in order to be Gan Eden, he has to be okay, so to speak, with the concept of idleness. And idleness is something which is the most dangerous possible situation in this world. As the Gemara says in Ksuvos, that a woman who is married to a very rich person and can have as many maidservants as she needs to exempt her from all the normal duties of a woman to a wife to a husband, still has to do knitting. Why? Because shashimu meidei deidima. Boredom brings a person to inappropriate activities. So therefore, Adam has to be given work in order to diminish his Yetzer Hara. Now, of course, the obvious question could be, why wasn't he given Torah to diminish his Yetzer Hara? So we assume that Adam had Torah beforehand, and it was not enough to have Torah. He had to have work as well. Okay, so let's go on. I just want to check. Everybody's with me still?
Yeah.
Yep.
Coming through? Yes. Okay, good. So, V'amar, they say, Asar Sochel, Shalot Tassiyas Tanuk, you won't get the pleasure, so Yoruch HaKodem Achei, which you had before the sin, V'machol in eating, U'v'mishteh, and in drinking, U'v'mashgel, and in sexual relations. K'mo Shekar L'Yisrael B'chetom, like Am to Christ, so in their sin, that's after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Kamram, like they said, Hatara, the lack of purity, Nutla, Esatam, Esarea, took away the taste and the fragrance. Vamasros, and the lack of taking off, Trumas and Mizras, Nutla, Shuman, Hadagon, they took away the fattiness of the grain, in other words, I guess the greater pleasure of eating grain. And so it's also there that Miyom Shinekra, Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash destroyed, Nidotam, Biyav, and Eaton, Olobra, Avera. The taste of sexual relations was taken away from normal people and given to people who transgress sins. Now, the remarkable thing about this is that, of course, we seem to derive pleasure in our day and age from eating, from drinking, and from sexual relations. So, and every Tom, Dick, and Harry seems to derive that kind of pleasure, not just pig or shine, right? So the question is, what we do with this? So I don't know the exact answer, but the obvious answer is that we don't know because we never experienced the higher level, whatever that might have been. In other words, evidently, when things are done with Kedusha, they are felt as a higher form of experience. I said that because the Yisov B'Shorosh HaVoda says, one of the great Mekubalim of the early 19th century, he says that the taste of food, the good taste of food, whether it comes from the food itself or from the mixing in of spices and herbs and condiments, comes from the spiritual side of the food. Because the spirituality is what differentiates the quality of fruit from fruit. What is the spirituality? So Chazal have a metaphor for that. They say, "Ein l'chol kol esav esav." There's no such thing as a grass. Shein malach omed alav u'makir. Then a malach doesn't stand over it and hit it. V'omelok down and says it grow. So the malach, meaning a spiritual force, intertwined and enmeshed and at the root of every material substance. So you say the Shai Shavada says that the spiritual force is what gives the food its special taste. And we have a Gemara like that. The Gemara says, like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, it says that once he had Antoninus, the Roman emperor or governor, whoever he was, over at his house on Shabbos, he served cold dishes because it was Shabbos morning, and the Antoninus tasted a taste of Gan Eden in the food. And he asked Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, "How do I get this wonderful taste?" So Yehuda Nasi said, "We have this one secret spice, and it's named Shabbos." So obviously, I should note that one of the great, I've said this many times, I'm sure some of you heard of this from me, one of the great pieces of evidence that there is a God is Pesach food. Pesach food on Pesach tastes good. I'd say all those Pesach cakes and other things made from potato starch on Pesach, they taste good. The moment Pesach is over, you can't look at them anymore. They're vile, disgusting. Why is that? So there's obviously some hashgacha in that. There must be a God, otherwise this food could not possibly taste good, even on Pesach itself. So that's just a digression, but getting built back to this point, in other words, there's kedusha in food, which causes the food to have a special taste. The higher you are, the more kedusha you are, the better your food tastes to you. So it's interesting, you know, we say that a tzaddik eats very little. But that which he eats, it's not that he's supposed to deny himself of the taste, because that would be to deny the kedusha, which is in the food. He tastes it on a higher level than other people taste their food. He might probably get a greater taste from that small amount which he eats than other people do get from more vast amounts that they eat. So here, so again, we can't understand it because we don't never experience that level of eating big kedusha. But that's what the Smyrna says, that on the level of Gan Eden, there was a much higher level of pleasure, which doesn't exist anymore. It goes on, Pasuk Tezvav, says the Sfarta, Ve'vah Shis, I'm going to put an enmity. Now, again, this is a very powerful statement which perhaps is difficult for our generation to grasp. She'tehe'ah Yishonim SS, that a woman will be repugnant, Be'nei HaKoach HaDimyoni, in the eyes of the power of imagery, Afilu Shelah, even her own. Kiam Ram, like it says, Isha, a woman is chemas mole tsoa, a bucket full of excrement. Upia mole dam, and her mouth, that's a euphemism, is full of blood. Vze yudume etza zohar venakeva. And both men and women will have that perspective on women. Now, it's a very hard thing to understand what exactly the Sfarnu is saying. But I think that what he's saying is that sexuality, after the sin of Adam Arishon and Chava, became something which was associated with dirt, with filth. Yeah. When we talk about something which is inappropriate in a sexual manner, we call it dirty, like a dirty joke, or a dirty story. And the sense of deriving pleasure from sexuality became one which is associated with a sense of coarseness, of vileness. And that's not, the pleasure therefore doesn't come evidently for most people, from the necessarily from the uplifting and spiritual and holy aspect, but rather from the degrading animalistic aspect. And I think that that's what Chazal are saying, that the way people regard women, I mean, men, and even as far as women regard themselves in terms of sexuality, is that it's there's a certain type of lust or desire for that which can be given a metaphoric description as a bucket full of excrement and with a mouth full of blood. I'm not sure if you have any better possible insights of this one, or you're welcome to share it, but I think that that is possibly what he's telling us. And of course, it's based on Chazal. And it says, continue on, Bein Zaracho, Bein Zaro, Lo Yezeh Ben Adam B'Chava Bilbad. It's not just between Adam and Chava. In other words, that there's going to be an intrinsic friction between man and woman because of this metaphor which the Sforno just explained to us about how the relationship is built on something which feels or is now perceived as being dirty. But besides that, Adam's relationship with the entire creation was ruined. Now, from now on, the creation and Adam are at odds with each other. So how that manifests itself is in the animals being violent towards Adam and towards humanity. But I think that what the Sforno is saying is that in and of itself comes from the fact that there was this sin which Adam committed, in which he gave in to his desires, and that diminished his stature in the world, so therefore he lost his Tzelem Elohim. He lost his imagery in which he looked, so to speak, divine. And that's what Achayim says later on, that, if you put me in this situation, I'm going to have to wander around. So, Komotzi Arguni, anybody who finds me will kill me. And the primary focus there, Rashi says, is on animals killing him. Why? Because the Tzelem Elohim, that unique nobility which humanity had before the sin, was lost as a result of the sin. So there's going to be all around friction. And Sforno goes on and says, "Hu yishuvcha rosh." He's going to quash you on the head. Now he says, "Hakocha dimyoni." This is the power of imagery of a person. Yam ita satanu will diminish the pleasure, b'tchila satsagoso, at the beginning of his attaining it. But mashiyed man, that which he will imagine, v'yitzayer, and depict, yiras hezek, a fear of getting hurt or damaged, be'echu satanu, by the quality of the pleasure, the kamuso, and its amount, v'sidro, and its arrangement. So, I think what this means is that, let's take too blatant an example, is that a person, it's a muscle, let's take it as a muscle, smoking is a pleasure, right? A smoker in our day and age cannot derive the same pleasure he would have derived 50 years ago. Why is that? Because the cigarette pack says that he's going to die. Other people look at him as if he's killing himself. He himself feels guilty. So the pleasure of smoking is diminished by all the external negatives which surround it. So any pleasure, says the Sforno, is surrounded by concern about the negatives. Even a person who throws everything over and says, let's eat and drink because tomorrow we'll die, is also, in a backhanded way, aware of the negative, and therefore that diminishes his capacity to enjoy. The pleasures in Gan Eden were meant to be on a level where there was no negativity, where there was no possibility of it backfiring on a person, and a person not to be concerned with that. But now it diminishes a person's capacity to be able to enjoy something. So that means that your head, this is meaning your imagery in your head, is going to quash your pleasure. You won't be in sync with what your mind is thinking or imagining and with what your senses are experiencing or tasting. Again, because of that anxiety, if I eat the pie, which is too high in cholesterol, maybe I'll get clogged arteries, right? If I eat the meat, for sure I'll get clogged arteries. And if I, you know, if on the other hand, I have too much wine, it's going to damage my liver, and so on and so forth. All these concerns and possibilities are going to diminish a person's pleasure. On the other hand, you will bite him on the heel. Besides the head imaging it, it's true in reality. That desire, when it overcomes a person, will lead to damage at the end of the pleasure. Like too much indulgence causes a person to have problems. So therefore, at the beginning, he's anxious, and that diminishes his pleasure. That's who you should call Rosh, right? The desire is going to cause you to be quashed by your head. And it doesn't really okay, and you, the desire, will quash man at the end by causing all the problems which you cause, which will, if they come about, make the whole pleasure like somebody who goes to a fancy restaurant and afterwards has stomach pains, right? So, again, you know, it diminishes the whole pleasure, the fact that afterwards, first of all, before, you might have been afraid of them, and afterwards you actually experience them. Okay, so the Sforno is an amazing thing because he really has to go pretty far out of the simple pshat of the pasuk in order to give this approach, which is to learn the pasuk as a metaphor, sukkim as a metaphor, which discuss what's going to happen to a man and his pleasures in this world and his status in this world as a result of the Eitz Hara. But this is what the Sforno says. According to Sforno, there is no snake. There is only the Eitz Hara and desire and lust and pleasure seeking and how they affect man. Okay? This part was stunning to me. It's very hard for me to accept it. But that's what this part says. And this part somehow, as we said last week, he made it into the Mikros Gedolos. And he made it in, so that makes it legitimate. Now, it's interesting, the Kli Yochar has a little bit of a similarity to that. So, clearly that it's not just the Sforno. He says that, Rav Farshim Amal, most of the Farshim say, Shayetzer Hara, that the evil inclination, Moshech Kocho draws its power, Minanocha Shakadmoni, from the ancient snake. Vayetzer Hara, and the Yetzer itself, Tomebit Gachuchar Bish, we learned this in Sukkot recently in MTA, and this is like the thread of a spider. It's like the yoke rope of a wagon. So it says it's going to a man is going to smite the Etora with his head. On his head, if he's diligent, go out of time by his Etora. But Rosh, at the beginning, what's over by Schola, meaning at the beginning of the process, take the bow or love, meaning when the Yetzer comes upon him, as who you should call, that the man will destroy the Yetzer. Keep him not kill, because easily and not so hard, man will be victorious over him. We not come out and remove it from him. Like you remove a cobweb. But in the beginning, he can't let the Yetzer take a hold. The Yetzer is going to follow the kill of the Yetzer. Yom after yom, day after day, Asher Naaseh Chazak, so the Yetzer becomes strong, then Kavasos Ago, like the yoke of a wagon, Oz Kosher, then it's difficult to overcome it, but Adram, on the contrary, Hui Natzkecha, he's going to be victorious over you. Chen Nehemiah on the Kosher, but said it to the snake, Vatot Hushufenu Akev, you'll get him at the heel, Ki Akev Ayin Osof, because the heel is the end. What's up is there, it means to say, she was so, that the enemy wants to fight against you, that's too late. Then you're going to spite him. Utin not chenu, and you're going to be victorious over him. So it'd be difficult to remove those ropes. And he goes on. I don't want to go through the whole thing; it's long. But he goes on. And he says more along the same lines. So according to Kli Yochar, it's interesting. Kli Yochar learns that there was a nachash of some sort, but the nachash's power was morphed into the Yetzer Hara. It became this power of the Yetzer Hara subsequently, and therefore when we speak about the curse, even though the original story was a story which was real, so to speak, there was an ancient snake, and the snake did say this to Chava, and then Chava sinned and said, etc., etc. But by the time we get to the curse has nothing to do with the original snake. The original snake is if it's gone. And this curse really pertains much more to the Yetzer Hara of a person which was previously manifest in the snake. This is like a little bit in the middle. Sfarim looks at the whole thing as a metaphor from beginning to end. The Kli Yochar evidently starts with it as a metaphor, as reality, and then changes it to a metaphor, at least at this stage in the process. Okay? So far, so good? Anybody still with me?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so the... those are the Mfarshim and the Mikros Gedolos. Now, it's interesting that there's a Medrash here, and this Medrash deals, one of the great problems with this, if you take it at a simple level, is what the heck does it mean that the Nachash eats dirt, right? Because we know that real snakes don't eat dirt. Right, Ron? Where's Ron?
Right.
Ron?
Yeah.
Right, snakes don't eat dirt?
Nope.
They could. Good. Okay. There's a very interesting medrash here. Medrash says, I see we're gonna have to finish this on Thursday. It's getting a bit late, but let me go through the medrash. The medrash says, just flipping the page to find it quickly. It says here, very interesting cryptic language. It says, "V'afar tocha kol yemei chayecha." Well, first I want to read you the one before. It says, "Avgichon chateleich." There are many descriptions here, elaborations of the curse in the Medrash. So, says the Gachatcha Teilech, when you're going to go on your belly, B'shashama Kodesh Baruch Hu Gachatcha Teilech, when Hashem said to the snake, you're going to walk on your belly, Yardu Malach Yasharis, the Malachim came, Kitzitzu Yadav Raglav, and they cut off his hands and feet. V'haya Kolo Halech Misof Olam Atzofo, and his voice went from one end of the world to the other. Now, you can take that literally, or you can take it metaphorically. You can go either way. It's literal that there was a snake and literally had its hands and legs chopped off. Or you could say that it means that the power of the Yetzer Hara, which initially was supposed to be used for good, so to speak, it would be the hands and feet of a person, those are snapped off. And now all the Yetzer Hara does is cause you to slither on the ground because we don't usually use the Yetzer Hara properly. The Medrash then goes on to say that this is also a metaphor for what happened to Egypt. Egypt was called the snake, Hatani Nagodo, and it was called its hands and legs were cut off. Okay. The interesting, the end of that paragraph says, Om Rabbi Lazar Afklo Lazar Shal Kodesh Baruch Hu Yesh Babracha. Lazar, even the curse of Hashem has a blessing. Omar, because it says, Iluish Amla Kodesh Baruch Hu Gichon Chateleich. If not, the fact that Hashem told the snake you're going to slither on your belly, how could the snake flee into the wall and go into a hole in order to be saved? In other words, its slithering is also its survival. The fact that it can go into small, tight spaces and hide there is what allows it to survive and not to be easily hunted down and eradicated. So again, one could learn that as literal and as metaphor, we'll leave that for now. Now the next paragraph. It says, V'afra tochal kol yimei chayecha. Amar Rabbi Chilfoy. Rabbi Chilfoy said, Lo afar mikol tzad. Not dirt on any side. El bokeya v'yorein, but rather it breaks into the ground and goes down. Achu magia l'sal until it reaches bedrock. V'shame gidin shal adama. And there it causes the sinews of the land, meaning evidently the earth underneath the ground, to fall in making its lair, the ochel, and it eats there. So according to this medrash, it's not that the snake actually eats dirt, but rather it goes underground and has to move dirt in order to eat. So it has to go through tremendous toil, and it can't eat in the open. It has to go underground in order to eat. So according to this, afar tochel kol yimei chayecha means in the dirt you're going to eat your entire life. Not you're going to eat the dirt itself, but you're going to eat within the dirt. Now, I did look this up, and I think I did say it's been a few weeks since I looked it up, but I think that this actually is the case, that snakes have to eat. They do eat underground. Perhaps not all of them, but I think that is the case. And this would resolve that issue of the most difficult part of the curse, which is how do we understand that the snake eats dirt? Ron, what do you say?
I don't know about that.
I missed that. You're on Skype again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so once you start talking, I can't hear the end of it. Try again one more time.
I'm calling.
No, forget it. It's not going to work. Okay, so I have to make a comment next time. I just wanted to go through one more source, and then we'll stop for tonight, and we'll continue Mitzvah Shem on Thursday. The Malbim. Ron, you're back?
I'm on a real phone now.
Okay, I can hear you now.
How many snakes do that, though? I thought snakes basically hide in bushes and snap out at little mice and stuff out in the open.
I don't know. That's something which is, now we have to find out. But according to the Medrash, I think I saw that is the case. But again, that is, according to the Medrash, that it's not to be understood that it eats dirt, but that it eats within dirt. And the truth is that even if it eats on the surface, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter. It's still a far tochel means within the dirt you're going to eat. I'm not sure
but
at all
for
the
this to be a curse,
who wrote apologetics about this over the years said that it means that you were taking dirt with your food, right? Which is normally the standard way of apologizing for the pasuk. You read the pasuk very simply. Afar tochel, within the dirt you're going to eat. Doesn't say tochel afar. You're going to
right.
eat. There's afar tochel, which means can mean eat in the dirt you're going to eat.
But the question is, if it's going to be a curse, then two things have to be true, which I don't think are. One has to be that the snakes did not behave that way before the curse. In order
well,
for this to be
upright, I don't think it behaved that way.
And two, that other animals wouldn't do this, because if other animals did it, they also would be cursed with this. So
not
other
necessarily. An animal which was originally eating the dirt, in the dirt, it's not a curse to downgrade, it's not being downgraded.
I see. But you still have the issue of the fact that the question is, did snakes' behaviors change?
Right.
At that time.
Yes. That's what, I think that there's once upon a time I heard, you probably heard this also, I don't know if we discussed it, that it's the dinosaurs who turn into snakes.
Dinosaurs turn into birds, I thought, not snakes.
What?
I think they still find snake skeletons even during the time of the dinosaurs. I think snakes are one of those things that haven't evolved almost at all, like alligators.
Uh-huh. Because that's I thought there was. I was thinking that I thought I heard that once. That was, then they would have indeed been eating upright and then have gone down to ground.
Well,
but,
I think what you're referring to is that they do say that snakes millions and millions of years ago did have appendages. There was that, I think I posted it once, there was this freak snake born in Japan somewhere that actually had a leg sticking out of it because it was a genetic defect because it went back to its leg genes or whatever. But those appendages would have been millions of years ago, not recently. So.
All right. Listen, again, it could be talking about specifically this snake who was the unique kind of snake who was upright, not about all other snakes at the time. In any event, the main point is that the pasuk can be read differently than everybody reads it. So I think we'll stop here for tonight because we've gone pretty far. Thursday, Mr. Shem will mop up what's left on this. And then I know that Adam, I'm sure, wants us to get back to Ovadia after that.
And I have someone here who is really interested in the shir on the little thing we say after Mincha.
Okay, but I first have to go back to Ovadia. It's not fair what I did to Adam.
All right.
We'll try to finish Ovadia quickly.
Okay.
Fair enough?
Cool.
Okay. All right, guys, have a good vlog and have a good week.
Well,
you too,
Rabbi.
Have a good night.
You too, Rabbi.
Okay, Thursday, Mr. Shem. Thanks, Mordecai.